Hello again, it's 34 Russell with Patrick Kelly, bringing you Airtime, the official podcast of the Olympic Styles of USA Wrestling Kansas. For the past couple of years, part of the excitement and build up to Fargo, I have asked wrestling celeb Jason Bryant to come on Airtime as a guest. With the 50th edition of the extravaganza canceled due to COVID, we'll have to wait until 2021 to get our Fargo fix. But Jason has graciously accepted the invitation to jump on during the hiatus. For the uninitiated, Jason is a voice behind many of the high-profile events that you're familiar with, including the NCAAs and the Olympics. He also cranks out content on his wrestling network and is active on social media. The awards and recognition are many. Jason is a mover and shaker in the sport of wrestling. Jason, welcome to the program.
It's great to be back. Great to be back here today in the great state of Kansas.
All right.
We're virtual, so yeah, I'm not in Kansas, actually, and there's a joke there somewhere. I'll just leave it alone.
Love the excitement. So I got to ask, how are you holding up without Fargo?
It sucks, man. I'm not going to lie. It sucks because I was telling my wife yesterday, I'm like, man, this is the first time in 22 years I haven't spent 8 days in Fargo, or at least five. I think the shortest tenure, I think when my youngest was born, I abbreviated my week a little bit. I went for five of the eight, which is the only time I've really ever shortened it. And now I'm sitting here going, okay, well, I don't go to Fargo this week. I don't go to Fargo next week. I don't go to the convention the week after. Don't go to the Olympics the week after that. Yeah, I really am. I'm verklempt. I mean, we're on video. You and I are right now. Behind me, you can see on my speakeasy, I've got my mugs out. I am celebrating. Fair, I'm doing a little bit of a virtual Fargo on Twitter. So every time we order Buffalo Wild Wings or I drink a nice cold beverage out of one of those mugs, I'm hashtagging virtual Fargo 2020 as if I was there. But I tell you what, bar tab's not going to be nearly as bad this year as it's been in past years. So
yeah. Well, despite the lack of much in the way of events since March, you've been keeping busy. Tell us about that and maybe a sneak peek into what you might have on the back burner in regard to projects.
Well, when wrestling stopped, you know, when you're based in a sports industry and you need those sports to compete for you to have, you know, have a job and have an income, you get creative with what you've got. And part of the things that I've been doing with my own time and with the Mat Talk Podcast Network is trying to chronicle and basically log the historical results. I mean, I've got a pile of amateur wrestling news as they go back to 1956. And while those magazines, I believe, are being digitized by South Dakota State University's library, the results therein aren't searchable in terms of you don't know who's going to do this. So one of the things I've done this off season, I would do in the off season, but the off season actually began earlier than some did, is I'm going through magazine by magazine and I'm using the NCAA guides and I'm logging the conference results. So I want to be able to build a database of, how many four-time ACC champions have there been? Because some of these conferences may just have a general record book, which lists maybe just the champion or maybe the team scores, but it doesn't go any deeper than that. And some of these amateur wrestling news and NCAA wrestling guides that the NCAA published through, I believe, 1982, are a treasure trove of information. Now, they are available online, but again, going through and trying to find something is not exactly the easiest way to do. So I'm taking the fact that I have the flexibility to work from home. My wife has been working from home. We've been watching our kids and being able to just put some of those things down into a database that make it easier to find. So eventually that's going to be something that I'll release. I'll probably hand off to the Hall of Fame. Those of you that are patrons to the podcast network at, you know, mattalkonline.com/contribute, you actually kind of get a working as it goes kind of access to it. I'm not selling the data. I'm just saying, hey, here's what I'm working on. Here's a sneak peek. But that's one thing I've been working on. I've been also trying to develop some stories. And it's harder, believe it, everybody and their mother is starting a podcast right now because a lot of people have time. Well, my time was doing podcasts. And now when it takes, you know, you've got to spend time more doing childcare and such, you know, the number of interviews I've put out during the pandemic have been minimal. Whereas, again, some other people are being a little bit more prolific. Well, the time management's different. So my list is growing of people I want to get on the shows, whether it be for the Hall of Fame Legends show, whether it be for Short Time, whether it be for the NWCA projects. I mean, that list is over 200, and I don't think it's ever going to get shorter. So a lot of projects that I really want to get done, and I'm starting in. And the most recent one was the update of the Fargo Almanac, which is a unique document that's a PDF that's every All-American that's ever competed in the tournament going back to 1971. And I'm still working on building the results because nobody has every bracket. That's just an impossible ask. So before people go, well, every result in there? No, they don't exist. I mean, some of the brackets may exist from 71, but you know, even some of the finals results don't exist. So I'm going to try to build a database of as many of those results as we can. So, you know, and results from 1995 on are online somewhere, but they've not been compiled in the same place. So those are just some of the things that gets my brains and my gears rolling. And I'm looking to find something that will educate, because, you know, when there's no events for me to talk about and announce, well, I've got to find something to keep my mind going and something to keep my role in wrestling, you know, tangible in terms of providing information that nobody else gets or providing it in a way nobody else has ever seen before.
Yeah, well, worthy projects in the wrestling community definitely is a benefit from them. So speaking of the everybody has a podcast thing and, you know, getting all that, you know, so much information out there. I'll say you do a great job. You know, you've got high level accolades on things you've done and people you rub shoulders with. But you do a great job of honoring all divisions and really vesting yourself in all levels of wrestling and prioritize getting bio details correct and accurately pronouncing even the most difficult names. So I could almost see your eyes rolling when a popular podcast didn't even realize that the JUCO and NAIA Nationals happened this year. Then a few episodes later, They pronounced Grace Simon's last name as Simmons. Ribbing aside, why do you put such a priority in getting it right when it comes to stats and pronunciations of names?
I don't get every name right every time. Now, everybody's going to make some mistakes. Sometimes it takes sometimes you almost, when you take the time and you think about it, well, that's how that guy's name is, and you don't look it up or verify it, that's when a mistake can happen. Sometimes names are hard to say no matter how many times you hear them. I think Andy Biesek's name, okay, but I ask him every single time because Biesek, it's not Biesek, we know that, but Biesek, but you know, there's just so many of those little things. You just want to make sure you don't screw it up, because it's like even with spellings, like Robbie Smith, we're talking with back-to-back Greco guys here. Robbie spells his first name with a Y, not I-E. And it's a little thing like that. And that comes from my time as a copy editor and page designer at the newspaper. You know, I started snagging phones when I was 16. And part of the things was, if you don't, you know, Daily Press Sports, Jason, okay, Nozinski, okay, spell the N-O-Z-Y-N-S, you know, you spell those, that's where it kind of came to it. And then journalism classes, and I remember an exercise that Joe Costco, who was one of my professors at college, said, and, you know, we were doing a mock press conference, and he threw a curveball by everybody and says, John whatever was his name. Well, John whatever spelled his first name J-O-N, and it was one of those lessons that the littlest thing can sometimes matter. Now, again, throwing, you know, ribbing and whatnot, I've made those mistakes. And sometimes it be gracious when you get a correction too. Don't necessarily be defensive. Sometimes you can say, oh, well, I thought, well, yeah, that's what most people are logically going to say. Most of the time, just take your head down. And a lot of the name pronunciations just come from being around it for years. So like the Georgians, not in the southeast of this country, but the Caucasus of, that part of the world, or, you know, Idzes, Odzes, Vigeles and stuff like that. You can understand their naming conventions and you don't really need to ask them every time, because you get, Rishalice or something like that. Or, you know, that the Russian alphabet doesn't actually contain a K. It's just translated like Chetag. It's like K-H is like a Chech. And, you know, there's syllables that we can't say as Americans that are still even hard to say when you try to know what you're saying. So ask questions and things like that. And then I just keep a list of phonetic pronunciations of going back to, I think, 2015 was the first time I did it. So that list has grown and it's added. And, you know, you keep a list of to avoid duplication of effort and things like that. And you share that with people that need to know it. But getting the names right as an announcer is important. From a broadcasting perspective, sometimes I think it comes with credibility. And I'm, you know, the first time I heard, and I use Gray Simons as a good example, because he was the coach at Old Dominion when I was there. He was a two-time Olympian. He was one of the greatest wrestlers to ever walk the earth. I think the fact that he was not on the 75th anniversary team is kind of a, that's not a good thing. which I did a whole series with the Rudy Show, basically justifying how Gray should have been on it. But even at the 2008 Olympic trials, Gray Simon's name was read across the hand of the cards of all the Olympians in there, and they said Gary Simmons. So I'm sitting there, and it's not the first time, and I'm not gonna give J.D. Rader much credit for that, because he's a good kid. He's, you know, a lot of these younger guys don't know Gray because he finished college in like 1961, so 61, 62. So those are the things that, again, I'm 40. I'm a man. I'm 40. We want to do some things that educate people, and things like the Fargo Guide and things like putting names like Gray Simons on everybody's, you know, tongue there to make sure that, hey, they remember people like this is important. Yo-Yo Utaki, for example, I don't know really. Only thing I know about him is statistically, but I ask guys like Tadaaki Hata questions about him and try to learn a little bit. So, but the pronunciations go with some credibility. It shows you've done your work. And then from a reporting standpoint, you know, getting names right, getting terminology right. I'm, you know, a bit of a stubborn when it comes to certain things. So I just think it's, you know, to get somebody's name right is to honor them too. So, I mean, yeah, everybody makes mistakes, and I'm not saying you're a bad person if you butchered a name or misspelled a name, but I just use it as a learning experience, write it down or say, I'm never going to make that mistake again.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. And I think it does add to the professionalism for sure. So, well, the diversity and scope of your coverage is really impressive. One topic that you have been in front of is a number of dropped college athletic programs since COVID. You recently had David Rippath on, Dr. David Rippath, and those of you who haven't heard of it, heard the program, especially college administrators, I think should have a listen to it. This is very, very good stuff. But there were several important points made and evidence that was brought forth. And one interesting thing that I found was the amount of fat that could be cut easily, especially from football, really for the betterment of the entire athletic department. And the other was a nugget about the pros and cons of multinational rosters prominently seen in tennis. What do you think are the 2 to 3 most critical areas that should be addressed for the total health of college athletic programs?
I think the fat of football is a big part of it, because everybody from the group of five, and if you're a college sports fan, you kind of know what I mean by group of five. It's anybody outside of the Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, Pac-12, and what's the other one? The SEC. I think that's all five, right? Anyway, you know which schools I'm talking about, plus Notre Dame. You know those schools. They're the ones who run college sports, whether we want to admit it or not. Yeah, okay. The University of Iowa's wrestling program, the Penn State's wrestling program, they're big time in our world of wrestling. But I'd give Iowa credit. They're gonna fill that state. They're gonna fill Kinnick for a wrestling duel meet, 42,000 a couple years ago. But you know, if you draw big crowds in wrestling, it really doesn't move the needle in terms of the athletic funding. I mean, there's 24 teams that averaged over 1,000. There's 50 volleyball teams that averaged over 1,000. But when we look at the importance of what those money means, everybody looked at it as revenue sports. And, you know, you've got the Knight Commission facts out there and numbers. College athletics accounting and funding is nothing is uniform. Nothing is universal. So schools can make it look like what they want. Oh, well, we bring in this much revenue. Well, how much of that revenue is student fees? How much of that revenue is actual donations? How much is from other sports being asked, or the donors from wrestling or volleyball or something, to, hey, we want to build this facility, so we're going to ask you for money for that sport, so eventually you will get this. And sometimes that doesn't happen. University of Oregon was supposed to get a new wrestling room. It's now it became a football like training room, I think, or something like that, because they said, hey, wrestling people, we're going to pace. We need some money from you to put this up, to build this. And then they ended up not doing it after there was a change in leadership. So the fat that can be cut, I don't think we need 85 scholarships in Division I football. But again, I'm coming from a biased perspective of a wrestling person where we can't even fully fund a starting lineup at its maximum. So 9.9 scholarships, we have 10 starting spots. And football has the benefit of moving a cornerback to strong safety, a linebacker to outside linebacker, a defensive lineman to flip, you know, the other side of the ball. They can play guard. I mean, you play two ways in high school. They've got the experience. You can take a wide receiver and make him a safety. You can do that. You can make a punter a kicker and vice versa. You know, a running back can be a wideout. So they've got that flexibility, and they have 85 full rides at the FBS level, 63 at FCS. And I'm like, okay, well, the reason these group of five teams are losing money is they're trying to keep up to keep those recruits. They want to be able to, the Kent State wants to be able to woo a kid that's okay. You got offered at Ohio State. Well, here you can play. And then we've got these cool training facilities. They try to keep up with it. And the group of five schools in large, there's a fringe of them that, you know, you're the wannabes like Connecticut or the new kids on the block, like Central Florida, that want to be able to compete at that level. Well, they want to do that. But at the same point, what impact is it? The NCAA Division I specifically sets a minimum number of sports. So, you know, you've got fan bases out here that only care about football and basketball, and they're being unrealistic, you know, when ODU cuts wrestling, oh, it'll make any money. Well, neither does any other freaking sport. So pay attention to the Division I landscape. The hotels before games, that's one thing that a lot of these conferences addressed. And, well, they're college kids. They can't wait. Well, they're adults, okay? I made stupid mistakes at 18 years old. Well, guess what? If I had to live with them, if you disobey your coach and you're not in on a Friday night because the guy next door to you is having a rager, well, that's, you know, be an adult, find some other place to sleep or something like that. I mean, I don't get these college kids can't do this, but they're supposed to do this. And you know, Bobby Wilder, the former coach at Old Dominion, had told me that, you know, when he was on the show talking about the things that he needed, the training staff, the pregame meals, all that type of stuff. Well, I want to know how one AA, or well, let's look at North Dakota State, because they're the powerhouse in FCS, which used to be one AA. How do they do it with 63 scholarships and make money at that level? They can. I mean, it's not, you know, big time. It's not SEC money. But I feel like if most schools would realize that they cannot compete with Alabama. So stop trying.
Yeah.
Or the FCS that are so poorly run, Alabama and Auburn and South Carolina, get $1 million, $1.5 million payday just to fund their athletic department. That's just piss poor leadership. If you're trying to, you're throwing your money sport, your best athletes against a school that has got you outgunned in every single aspect. And a lot of injuries happen in those games too. And it's like, you're going to risk your best kids to make money to support your pro. I just think the whole model is broken. So I'm starting to see these G5 and FCS conversations say, hey, let's play in the spring. I think that's a great idea. I think it's great. Fine. You know what? Because they'll be the focal point in, you know, okay, darn, Alabama doesn't have to play the Citadel in November and their non-SEC game and blow them out 59-0 to get another, you know, 70,000 people in the stadium to make some money. So I really think that the money games need to go because the whole system needs to be blown up, like Dr. Ridpath said. I don't believe that some of these schools, we should have a bigger FCS. That's an NCAA championship. If the autonomous five, power five, that's not an NCAA trophy anyway. So, you know, it's money. It's what people like. But if people only care about two sports, they got to realize they're 16 to be Division I. So I think some of it's a mindset. And then some of it, the fans just don't care. You know, I'm arguing with my own, you know, people from Old Dominion. They don't care about wrestling. They only care about football and basketball. Well, that's not their fault. But at the same point, you know, don't say you're a fan of your school when you only care about certain parts of your school. So that's kind of a soapbox. I didn't really get to all the things that we could trim, but it's just a mentality that we have to change as sports fans. And wrestling people, we're guilty of it too. We are so zoned in on what the world is like in wrestling that sometimes, and that's why I'm doing the drop sports counters. So we have a visual of other sports that we feel like we've always been beaten up. We're always cut. Tennis is being destroyed right now. I mean, over almost 60 programs are gone in men's and women's tennis, and they've never seen a drop like that. So to understand how the other side lives, we need to, you know, and our wrestling coaches associations are partnering with those sports. So I think part of that is just to kind of open that. We need to be better sports fans if we're going to be better sports fans. I guess that's what it breaks down to.
Yeah, well, I hate to get you too much more fired up, but, you know, you mentioned ODU wrestling. Now, here's a program that, you know, moving along, doing a good job. Kids are behaving themselves, doing great academically, you know, sprinkling an All-American here and there every year, you know, most years. You know, I know it's a true sore subject with you, but, you know, the doormat aside here, but what can programs do, not just wrestling programs, but the Olympic sports programs do to hold themselves harmless? Or is there a way to do that?
I think when you're looking at the minimums, when you're at a school with 16 sports and you've got 6 men and 10 women, that's basically the safest you can be at the Division I level because you can't cut any more to get below that. And then unless you're, you know, Central Michigan and Wright State have dropped sports to drop them below the minimum number of men's sports. They're going to apply for a waiver, but within 2 years, they need to get a men's sport back. So initially it was supposed to be one of the six. And a lot of the times that six on the men's side is football. It's basketball. Then you've got usually a golf in there. And then you've got three running sports: indoor track and field, outdoor track and field, and cross country. So you've got one group of core athletes that are, you know, you've got scholarships for each of those, but they count indoor, outdoor, and cross country as three separate sports. Then you add a six man roster of golf, and then men's basketball and, you know, football. There's your six men's sports. It used to be endow your program. I mean, yeah, endowing your program is probably the only way to do it. Not endow a scholarship, not endow a coaching position, because if you endow a coaching position, they can drop the program, still pay the coach to, you know, be an administrator for whatever. You know, that's something to look at. And I guess endowments. And then now endowments they're looking at is, you know, Wood Selig, the athletic director at Old Dominion, replied to James Nicholson, who was one of our two-time All-Americans, is, oh, we'll need $25 million. You didn't even ask. Then you auctioned off the mat. So don't just throw out an arbitrary endowment figure. So endowing is probably the only way to do it, because what's interesting is we're in a different kind of crossroads with, okay, are we asking our donors to fund the wrestling program or the RTC? Because I think a lot of donors, based on the amount of time we've seen sports cut, are very hesitant to give money to a school, knowing that they can probably find a way to take it away if they really want to. Let's look, you know, I think the historical relevance of Notre Dame basically taking the endowment money from the widow and shifting it to football, and then Notre Dame football, that is what it is in Notre Dame, but the wrestling program ceases to exist because they talked a widow out of her husband's, you know, endowment. So you're going to have situations like that. But then you have to look at Stanford, which has so much money. And yeah, I mean, endowments don't exactly work like a checking account, as people have brought out. But you think Stanford's safe? You think Stanford men's volleyball, which has won national titles, is safe? I mean, you can say those other NCAA sports. I feel like those athletes are valuable. I live with sailors when I was at Old Dominion. You know, one of them across the street, Anna Tunnicliffe, was an Olympic gold medalist for the United States in sailing. So it's like you've got those sports, those non-NCAA sports, have value to our Olympic movement. So just because they're not an NCAA championship, like fencing and archery, fencing is a championship, but those smaller sports, rifle and pistol, they all have a role in our Olympic movement. So just jettisoning them because, oh, well, they don't make any money. No sports make money. Sorry, I can't get on that. Yeah, football may make it. But the point about endowments to make things safe, endowments the only way to do it. And then, you know, again, do you trust the school? Do you want to give it to the RTC? Does the wrestling program doesn't get any credit for bringing in monies to the RTC because you're trying to pay your volunteer assistant to save the school money? We really got to figure out what's going on, because we're a charity sport. You know, we're a friends and family sport. Those things we don't want to admit, because, okay, they're at 12 schools across the country. They can kind of support themselves, but are they really? Take student fees out of the equation. Who's actually bringing in the school money? Well, who's bringing in school money? Small programs that are tuition driven. So, you know, if ODU's not necessarily going to fill those 32 spots that they got rid of from the wrestling team. Stanford, however, has a wait list a mile long because it's one of the most prestigious. They're not going to have a problem filling those spots with tuition paying students. Whereas ODU, with its high acceptance rate, and, you know, they've got a problem there. They're going to have a drop in enrollment, and they're going to have to fill those coffers somewhere. So I think the only safe way is to endow your program, and that's going to take a lot of money.
Wow. Now, you know, rock and a hard place. It's a tough situation.
Catch 22. I mean, it's a chicken and the egg. It's every cliche, analogy, metaphor, simile, whatever you want to throw at it. I slept through that in English class. Yeah.
So two broadcasts that you've recently done that were particularly lump in the throat meaningful to me were your retelling of the lead up to the announcement at the D3 Nationals in Cedar Rapids, and the announcement itself, and then the immediate reaction that you saw on the floor in Cedar Rapids. Take us back to the U.S. Cellular Center and what was going through your head in that situation.
Probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do as a professional. So I drive down about 5 hours. We're not sure what's going on. So I'm getting in the car. It's about a 5-hour drive from where I live to Cedar Rapids. Get there, check into the hotel. Go over up to the head table. I'm trying to get things organized. Going to run sound check. I got some teams working out. There's six mats on the floor. That's a great place for college wrestling. That's a great place for a college championship. The, you know, Cornell College is the host institution. You've got the hotel, the DoubleTree connected right there to it. You got some great little spots, a lot of craft beer spots that I really like down there too. But, you know, you get in, we check in, and John Peterson, who used to work at St. Cloud State, was announcing with me. I'm sitting there talking with the track wrestling guys. Bob Patneski, the head coach at Penn State Barron, is on the NCAA committee. Scott Honecker from Williams College is also there. JP Williams, who's the, you basically, people know Anthony Holman from Division I. Well, JP is the Division III director of championships. And, you know, there's, you know, Dick Simmons, the tournament director. We're just kind of milling around, and then there's calls coming back. We're all like wondering what's going to happen. And we're just, okay, we're going to proceed as normal. We got no fans that we know that's going to happen. I think there's a limited number of family that would be allowed. And right around 3:15, I think is when it was, is I hear people say, well, the NCAA just tweeted it. And then JP's gone. Like, where's JP? He's on the phone with the office back at Indiana. And then Scott from Williams comes up and goes, hey, JP's going to send you an email. You need to read it as it is, and then you can release it and do whatever you want. You know, because there's that role you play as hired by the NCAA and journalists. So email comes in, and I wonder if I've still got the note. I actually think I still have it up here on the computer. So, what it was, I know I've got it on here. I just looked at it the other day. Yeah, here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, as most of you know, several sporting events have been canceled today. The NCAA has determined that all winter and spring championships, including this NCAA Division III championship, are canceled effective immediately. For NCAA participants and team personnel, if you traveled here by air, please call Shorts Travel regarding your return flights. Please demonstrate patience as there are several championships with cancellations underway. Please visit NCAA.org for a complete news release. Thank you for your support of NCAA student athletes. That was the release. Wow. And right about the part where I go, are canceled effective immediately. There was a group from Baldwin Wallace right kind of down, because the head table was raised up a little bit. And down, just down to my right, you could hear him start sobbing. Way far across the mat, I think it was a kid from Millikan, dropped to his knees and just screamed out an F-bomb, understandably distraught. And then you see teams of kids. They're not even on the same team, huddling together. They'd been warming up. They're huddling together. Some of them are praying. Some of them are, you know, arm in arm. And it was a moment where I had to put down the microphone, and I walked down off the table. I walked back behind a curtain. I sat down against a wall, and I lost it. I just lost it. I mean, I can feel it right now. And I thought I was hidden from everybody. And then Bob Patneski walks by me and looks at me and goes, you okay, Jay? I couldn't even make an intelligible sentence, man. Because these kids lost. I mean, it's that helpless feeling when you have something taken from you through no fault of your own. You did nothing wrong. And we didn't know a whole lot about what was going on with this pandemic. And ultimately, I hate to say it, but I think it was probably the right decision. At some point you can look at it and be a, you know, revisionist history. Well, everybody was already there. Just let them wrestle. But, you know, we don't know. We know a little bit more now. I honestly don't know, because it's hard for me to keep up with it because I got other priorities like my family. I mean, I just like, okay, keep my kids away. But that moment, it was painful. Because I felt bad for every single one of those athletes. And in Sioux Falls, the Division II kids were dealing with the same thing. The NAIA announcement came a little bit later, and the women at the NAIA Invitational in Jamestown, North Dakota, they dealt with the same thing from a wrestling standpoint. And then all around, we had Big East tournament, basketball tournaments just stopping mid-game. I mean, from a wrestling standpoint, and, you know, this isn't about me, but you felt it. You felt the hurt, and it's unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. And it's really kind of hard to chronicle, because I just remember. And it was the point where I looked at, I remember JP is like, do I go home? He goes, man, stay here. So, you know, basically I got paid my mileage. I went out and, you know, I'm not going to advocate binge drinking by any stretch of the imagination, but I got good and torn up. Walked across the street. There was a nice place that had 60 beers on tap. There were 2-for-1s when I got there. Slept pretty well. Not because I was in a good place to sleep, but there was a lot of, I don't want to say aggression released, because it was more sorrow. I mean, people would just come in and a bunch of coaches would, it was like a revolving chair of coaches sitting in our booth. And it's just like the kid, I just feel so bad for the kids. I mean, especially Division III, they're paying their way to be there. It's non-scholarship athletically. I mean, some of them get their athletic rides and stuff, and you know, there's no redshirting in D3, and you know, some of the coaches immediately asked for eligibility waivers and such and didn't know what was going on. We just didn't know. And it was, again, one of the hardest situations to try to wrap your head around, because some of these seniors, this was their first shot. This was their last shot, but it was their first chance at the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the All-American status, which interestingly enough, we found out, I even know this, and I worked for the NWCA, but the NWCA is the one who actually announces the All-Americans, and they've just typically followed the placements from their respective national tournaments. Well, in other sports, it's the other coaches' associations. You know, in some cases, it's the media, like the AP first, second, and third basketball team and things like that that name the All-Americans. Well, it's not the same as standing on the podium and hearing national champion or All-American. And, you know, they lost that opportunity. There's 80 kids in each of those divisions that lost the opportunity to hear All-American from so-and-so, or that opportunity, national champion, and get their hand raised on their last match of their career. So, yeah, it's I'm sure it's a little bit of a consolation prize for them to be All-Americans, but it's honestly, they know it's not the same. And I'm glad that at least the NWCA did step up and made an alteration to their process to honor these kids. They did 16 per weight in Division I, 10 per weight Division II. They did everybody in Division III. It was first team, second team, and then honorable mention, which is 18 per weight. So, again, the whole gamut of emotions about Cedar Rapids, like I said, I can't tell the story without welling up, because it gutted me. It made me just sick to my stomach I couldn't imagine what those kids were feeling. I kind of heard it verbally. And then kids out there with the cool thing, I think you had a kid from like Stevens Point and MSOE, or Stevens Point and Baldwin Wallace or something. They wrestled a live match. They had people working. They had a referee. They had a coach with the stopwatch, and they both raised each other's hands at the end of the mat. And it was just like, it was surreal in some respects, and it was sad in other respects. So,
yeah, what was like I say, it was lump in the throat hearing it initially, and your retelling too.
Lump in the throat now.
Yeah, exactly, and your retelling as well. But the other, a little bit lighter, but still, it just kind of stopped me in my tracks when I would hear them, are the senior send-offs that you did. You know, a little more lighthearted and fun, but to me, it was just like a sobering reality of the finality of the situation. And you know, what kind of feedback did you get for that? And you know, as going through it, I guess three names that stick out to me for whatever reason are Piccinini, because I think he was about the first one that came out and, you know, even before everything was final, kind of, you know, had his peace with it and knew it was ready, time to move on. Taylor Lujan of UNI, I just think he's such a UNI kind of wrestler, and for him to not have a chance at a you know, on the mat, All-American honor, possible national champion. The other, Colin Moore. You know, those are the three that kind of stand out to me. But it just overall, it was, you know, again, it was kind of fun and lighthearted. But it at a point, it just kind of stopped me in my tracks, and we're like, man, this is it.
Yeah, that took on a whole new meaning this year. And before I started announcing the Nationals in 2016, Todd Hibbs, who had previously been a PA announcer at the NCAA championships, I believe from 2003 to 2013, he did it with Sandy and at the various events. And he told me before I started in 2016, when I got, you know, we got D3 and D1 in New York, says, you're going to love the senior send-off. And I don't even know if that's what he had called it, but he says that was his favorite moment, is calling the seniors as they walk off the mat for the last time in the placement rounds. And it's one of those things that Brian Hazard and I were, we would pay attention to it. And especially at D3, we didn't really start doing it until a couple years ago. And, you know, I've tried to introduce it at the NAIAs and didn't do a great job at that this year. We did get a bunch of them, but we, you know, it's like, oh crap, we're at 33. We just missed 25 seniors. So, and then, you know, at the NAIA, we had a kid from Oklahoma City ask for his medal early because he had to report to boot camp. So he got a standing ovation in Wichita because we announced like at finishing in eighth place, he has to report to, for, you know, US Army, whatever boot camp. And he got a standing ovation. But when we get to the send off, we had started a group chat in Facebook with the PA announcers. I was like, hey, can we, let's do this. And so far we've still got D2 in the NAI women to put out. And, you know, I'm blessed to have this equipment that I can just crank it out pretty quickly. But, and Brian, the same way, John Peterson did his stuff for D3 over the phone. And, you know, it's just working technologically can things, but we're still planning on getting D2 and the NAI women out. But the send off, I think, resonated with me personally the most in two instances. Division one, when Gary Taylor at Ryder was retiring, we knew he was going to be done. Well, Ryder had a couple guys in the All-American round, one of them, which was Chad Walsh. The other was Ryan Wolf. Well, Gary doesn't corner Ryan Wolf. John Hange always did. So it was either Nick Bedleon and John Hange, and Gary would corner Chad Walsh. Well, Walsh is done and that's it. And there is, it's not Chad Walsh's senior year, but it's the send-off that gave us the opportunity to say goodbye to Gary Taylor. Same thing with Barry Davis, whereas it was the send-off round was where we gave Barry Davis his sign-off. It was when Evan Wick pinned Chance Marsteller, jumps in his hands, it's Barry's last All-American, he's in the corner, and then boom, there's the Barry Davis moment. From an athlete perspective, it's guys like Chris McCotty at Old Dominion, finishing his career as a two-time All-American and, you know, walking off that mat in fifth place. None of these guys want fifth place. None of these guys want third place. You know, everybody wants to win the title, but just that moment, or when David Terrell finished fourth after giving Nathan Tomasello a war, Brian Hazard goes down there and interviews him, and it was one of the most organically moving moments of any senior set. This guy just got beat in a barn burner. We're sticking a microphone in his face and, you know, hey, finishing his career as an All-American. He was a 15 seed. He beat Joey Dance to set his path to place. And it's these guys that are the first time there, the seniors. But you bring up Taylor Lujan, and that's also probably the one guy in Division One that I do feel the most for, because he had not been there. I mean, he'd been so close. Meaning not been there, not been on the podium, so close, the one seed in a wide open weight. And, you know, the drama around Zahid being what it is. And then you've got kids like Hunter Boland, Lou Dupre, you got a really, really talented field there at the weight class. And he's going to say first team All-American on a certificate, but he's not going to know that feeling to stand on the podium. Finally, it's something he's been looking for. And again, he's the guy, the Georgia kid at the, you know, the mid-major program at Northern Iowa with a lot of history and tradition. And, you know, you ever been to West Gym? It's just awesome. You know, the guy you really circle is like, I remember him coming out of high school. Like, that's the toughest kid I've seen. I mean, just tough. So for him to lose it, Colin Moore not having a chance to win a national title after placing a couple times, winning a junior world bronze medal, winning, you know, international medals. It's like, you know, he'd at least had the opportunity to hit in the podium. I mean, he'd had a couple shots, and I think that's maybe the difference between him and Lujan. Lujan, yeah, had a couple shots, but it's like, man, just that's probably the one. Yeah. The one kid in Division One that really kind of I felt most for was Lujan.
Well, before we sign off, you'll be hosting a wrestling happy hour to close out the opening day of the upcoming NWCA virtual convention. What should participants look forward to in that?
The most impossible wrestling trivia question challenge you have ever seen. This is impossible. There are 40 questions. I came up with them all myself. And the funny thing is all the information is out there, but there is no, I mean, and it's from Fargo stats to D1, D2, D3, NAIA women. It is got Olympics. It's got some of the most encompassing and, oh, I didn't know that type of questions, even though some of them are from the deep you know, back here in my head that, like, I've been saying this question for years. If you know me, you can think about it and figure the answer. And then we ran a test run of it last week just to test the technology. We're going to be using Kahoot. So you can, your people are watching it on the webinar using their phone or using the browser to answer the questions. And one of the smartest guys in wrestling I know only got 13 of the 40 right.
Oh, wow.
So it is, it's a ball buster, man. It's going to be fun. The NWCA, you can follow that at NWCA Wrestling on Twitter. They've got all the information. I know the Hall of Fame has been putting it out there, NWCA Online. And, you know, it's got a $250 gift card to Amazon's first prize. I got another couple prizes with it. So top three place, you know, it, and it's a happy hour. So this may be the first time the NWCA lets me actually have a beer while on the clock, you know, so I've got, I'm going to be moderating it. And Dan Weaver and Nate Nas, another Kansan who's right. been out there helping us out. And we tested it and went through some questions, be like, that one may be a little iffy. We may have a little contention there. So we changed things out. We really did some real historical stuff, and I'm really happy with how it turned out, and maybe we'll, you know, the video, it's going to be a Zoom chat, a webinar. So, NWCA Wrestling on Twitter is probably the easiest way to find the information since they're tweeting it out on social. So, yeah, any complaints, see my lawyer, but yeah, it's going to be fun because again, you mentioned this in the beginning of the show that, you know, I like to mention all the levels, and I think we're better as a sport if we can embrace the 400 plus teams we have and know something about them. You know, the controversy right now about women's wrestling, and, you know, women's college wrestling is not even 20 years old. The first dual meet in college wrestling was in 1903. May have been a giveaway to one of the trivia questions. So think about that for a second. You've got, and you get fan bases and powerful fans from Iowa's and Penn States that have had generations of wrestlers to really get behind and follow. Women haven't had that yet. So when, you know, the argument is like, well, there's no fan base for women. They've only had less than 20 years at the college level, like 16 years of the WCWA. That's it. You can't, you know, I joke that nobody's grandma wrestled.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Good point. Yeah.
I don't want to throw Trisha Saunders under the bus. Her kids are getting old enough to where she may be the first, you know, but again, you know, Jake Pataxel, I use him as an example, an All-American at Purdue. His grandfather was an NCAA champion. Women do not have that. They don't have that woman that has ever blazed the trail and created a 50-year culture of winning at Power 5 school. I mean, if you're going to look at the fan base at Iowa and the fan base at Oklahoma City or King University, they're not the same in any sport. So for us to believe that, you know, I'm getting off on the women's tangent here a little bit, but again, there's almost 80 women's programs. There's going to be 80. Get on the train, folks. It's going to happen. And, you know, those people that have been hating on it for years, you know, we're not adding women's programs to save the men's programs. They're going to help save the men's program, but that's not the reason. We're doing it because our daughters deserve the best things about wrestling that our sons do. So little soapbox moment there. But yeah, I'm also looking forward to that trivia contest.
Well, we've been visiting with Jason Bryant during what should be Fargo Week. Mr. Bryant, it's an honor having you on. All the best to you.
All right, Pat, I always appreciate it, man. I always love talking wrestling. And hopefully, you know, I've been, my last wrestling tournament I worked was in Kansas. So,
yeah, there's a trivia question right there.
Yeah, it was in Wichita. Me and Mark Burchard at the NAIA does a great job. And, you know, Wichita was a great place. Found a good little burrito truck when things were over. I think it was Central. There's a brewery there that I really enjoyed. I've got a glass behind it, behind here in the speakeasy. And then, you know, had a chance to hang out with Jerry Briscoe, who always loves coming to the NAIA tournament. He's looking for talent. So Wichita next year, when we will wrestle again is what the Nike shirts are saying. So I enjoy every trip I have. Topeka did a great job as a host. Wichita did a great job as a host. So looking forward to more quality Kansas wrestling time here.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been Patrick Kelly with 34 Russell, bringing you Airtime, the official podcast of the Olympic Styles of USA Wrestling Kansas. Until next time, thanks for listening.